Your host, Parker, Dan, and Angela, slice and dice their way through the good.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
The bad.
You brought the devil!
There's a devil inside everyone.
And the ugly movies you love.
And you can't piss on hospitality! I won't allow it!
Hold your favorite films and franchises tight, because they aren't safe. In fact, it's already too late. It's time to dissect that film.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Dissect That Film podcast, where we dissect the good, the bad, and the ugly of cinema. I am your host, Brett Parker. Joining me, as always, my wonderful co-host, Dan and Angela of DNA Gaming.
Hello.
And back once again to talk about hopefully a better movie than the last time he was on the show. We have the one, the only, the famous Tony from Hack the Movies.
Are you saying that I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer was not a good film? Are you excited that they're doing a legacy sequel now and they're bringing Jennifer Love Hewitt back?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Didn't they just do a show that no one watched?
Yeah. I watched the first three episodes and then I fell off. Yeah, they're doing a legacy sequel. They're bringing her back.
Oh, God.
Are you excited?
I mean, I'm always excited for Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Canon? Who knows?
Dude, the only thing I remember from that movie is the scene with the fucking gondola shop where they're like, whatever, the little shuttles that go up and they're all there and that dude's there. And like, that's the only thing I remember from that fucking movie.
I'm just so happy we're starting this episode talking about more of that movie.
We have to.
Good point, Parker. Another thing I want to bring up about I'll Always
Please.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so if you want to listen to us talk about I'll Always Know What You Did Last Summer with Tony, it's an episode from a long time ago. It's before our 100th
it's
episode,
somewhere back there.
Yeah, it's somewhere back there. Listen to the episode. Don't watch the movie. I usually don't do that, but that movie is atrocious. Today, though, we are talking. We are in the midst of our month of 1991 because that was the year that I was brought to this earth. So last week we covered Silence of the Lambs, and then this week we're doing a complete 180 and we're talking about 1991's The Giver.
Your friend found a most valuable item. I must find out how he managed to activate it. The Giver unit, I need your help. You saw it work. Tell me, how did your friend activate it?
I said, let her go.
No. The movies are very similar. Buffalo Bill wanted to transform into something else. And in this film, you have a bunch of people transforming into other things.
You know what, Tony? You got me.
People wearing suits.
You got me. You got me there. Yeah.
If only Buffalo Bill was born a zoonoid, his problems would have been solved.
Would it be ironic if he wasn't a buffalo, though? He's just another animal.
Imagine Ted Levine just shows up in The Giver.
Oh my god.
Oh Lord. So before we get into all the behind the scenes stuff, let's go around the room and talk about our history with the movie. And I think only one person on this panel actually has a history with this movie. So Tony, tell us about your history with The Giver.
Okay. I watched it in college. And the reason I watch it in college is because me and the kids in film school, when I went to community college, we would all hang out in the film lab and just talk about movies all day long. And I would be like, wow, I hope one day I get a real job and I don't just talk about movies all day long. Anyway, fast forward. And I remember the one guy came in, he was talking about like the Guyver, and I'm like, what's that? I haven't heard of it. And he's like, oh, I got to show you the scene. Mark Hamill turns into a grasshopper. And I'm like, stop right there. I'm in. Let's do this. So yeah, we watch just that scene, which I didn't realize at the time is like a major spoiler. So I remember I looked up the movie. I definitely watched it in college, although rewatching it, I remember a lot of the monster stuff, but I forgot what the plot was. I forgot Michael Berryman was in it.
Not much of one, by the way.
One thing I remembered was that I did know is that the cover is misleading. It makes you think Mark Hamill is the Guyver. He is not.
Yep.
But yeah, no, revisiting it, I'm like, man, I'm shocked I didn't watch this movie more, because this is really up my alley, and it has so many people involved with the production who I like, and I like all their other stuff. But it was fun revisiting this one. I'm excited to watch the second. I don't think I've ever seen the second.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the second one I think you can watch right now on Prime. It's on a streaming service.
This is on YouTube, to be honest. I tried to see if the first one was streaming free, and I think the second one showed up.
This one is so hard. If you don't own a physical copy of this movie, it is almost impossible to find it. So
bizarre.
We all watched it on Internet Archive. I will say it right now, because that was legit the only way we could watch it, because none of us own it. I will always advocate for physical media.
Yeah.
I have physical media behind me. But yeah, this movie was impossible to find. It gets a 4K release in May.
Oh,
because I was going to buy the DVD thinking it was an older copy. I was like, oh, $20. I'll snag it. Whatever. No. It's part of that it's part of that package with the 4K Blu-ray, the regular Blu-ray, and all that stuff. So I'm like, oh, well, I guess we got to find another way. We almost didn't do this episode because I couldn't find the fucking movie to watch. But we found it. We watched it. And here we are.
Yeah.
Sorry for picking a complicated movie.
That's the thing. This movie isn't complicated. It's just complicated to find.
It is weird. I didn't realize like how hard it was to find. That's bizarre, because
yeah,
people talk about the second one all the time. I figured they just both be streaming. Why are all six Trancer films streaming at all times, but you can't get one Guyver movie?
I think Tubi must have a deal with Full Moon. That's why the Trancer movies are.
Oh, I think they do. I honestly think there's like a Full Moon channel.
Because you find every Puppet Master, every Trancer's Doll Man, the demonic toys.
Full Moon tried to have their own streaming service. I don't think it lasted.
Oh man, I would have gotten that. I'm heartbeat. I didn't know about that. Oh man. So The Guyver was released March 18th, 1991, a little bit before I was born, but.
Hey,
there we are. What?
A day after the recording.
Wow.
It's anniversary.
That's crazy. It's going to be celebrating its 33rd anniversary tomorrow as of the recording. So not when you're listening to this, but
yes.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool. This
happy anniversary, Guyver.
Fuck yes. Thank you, Grasshopper Mark Hamill.
Oh, God. So as Tony stated, the cover of this movie has... it says Mark Hamill, and it has his face alongside the Guyver suit. So me, when Dan picked this movie to cover for this month, I got excited. I was like, cool, kind of a Power Ranger-like movie with Mark Hamill, I'm in. And then I remember trying to find the movie, and I was trying to make sure the copy was good. And I saw this other guy who I was like, who the fuck is that guy? And why is he the Guyver? Is this the right movie? So I had to go all the way to the end and watch the credits to see who was in the movie and match it up to Wikipedia's cast list to realize I had the right movie, because this cover is so misleading.
Yeah. Although it does look like one of the covers too. Did you know this was based off a manga series?
Yeah, it's called Bio manga. Booster Armor Guyver. Yeah.
And I mean, we'll talk about the effects. They did a 1-to-1 recreation of the suit. Like they took no artistic liberties with the suit. It is just the suit from the comic, which is funny because it's a complicated suit. A lot of times low budget superheroes suffer that time would try to just make some artistic liberties. But the cover of that is the guy half Guyver, half regular face. So, you know, they were trying to be faithful. I, by the way, I haven't read any of the comics or watched any of the anime. Sorry.
This is my first bout into this franchise. So I think the last time I had talked about this movie before Dan mentioned it, I think you might have mentioned it on your show. I couldn't tell you what episode it was, but I think it was mentioned in an episode. And I was like, oh, maybe I should check that out someday. And then Dan mentioned it, and that's when we finally covered it. So
I probably was talking about misleading covers to a movie.
I'm
trying to think like why I would bring this up, or maybe it was Power Rangers 2.
Yeah,
because the guy who worked on this did a Power Rangers thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's a lot of episodes of my show. Who can remember what I said?
I don't remember the shit we recorded last week.
At the time of this recording, I just realized I switched the date on two episodes, and I didn't realize the one episode was supposed to come out on a holiday, and I have so many jokes about the holiday, but now the episode makes no sense because I'm releasing it on the wrong day, but I filmed it so long ago, and I forgot what I said in it. I'm like, oh, so now I have to film an insert of me being like, hey, guys, I'm making a lot of jokes. I realize it's not the right day. Just go with it.
Be like, hey, there, future Tony here.
I've done that. There's been a lot of future Tony, especially over the last year.
Tony records like 10 episodes in 2 weeks. We record two in 2 weeks. So this movie was directed by Screaming Mad George and Steve Wang, both pretty big effects artists back in the 80s. Screaming Mad George, of course, I think most famous for Society, Nightmare on Elm Street 4. He also did work on Predator. What was the other one that we mentioned before we
arrived? Freaked. And Nightmare on Elm Street. He did effects for Silent Night, Deadly Night 4 and 5. And the producer, Brian Yuzna, worked on those too.
Brian Yuzna.
He did a bunch. I'm trying to see.
We talked about Big Trouble in Little China, which is an episode we released a couple weeks ago, and we never mentioned it. So here it is, guys. We mentioned the fact that he worked on that movie.
Holy shit, guys. He did he did the Reanimator sequels. Seeing here that he did Faust, Love of the Damned. That's another comic book adaptation with Jeffrey Combs. We're going to want to do that. It's based, actually, the comic it's based off predates Spawn. But the movie was made after the Spawn movie came out, and it is trying to be Spawn, which, again, I love that movie. Not the best film. So a direct-to-video cash grab, it's as good as you can imagine. But also has way too faithful of a comic book suit. Like, if they look at it, it's like, you could have taken some liberties with this. But okay, Screaming Man George, he's a purist. He's like, nope, that's what it looks like. We're making it look like that.
I respect that. That's awesome.
Then we have Steve Wang, who has worked on Kamen Rider. He also directed the sequel to this, Guyver Dark Hero. He also worked on Power Rangers for a bit, which you can really feel in this movie that this is very much a darker Power Rangers movie.
Well, this is like this is an effects movie. Like, they are making this movie to show off their effects, kind of like the guys who did the John Wick movies. They were stunt choreographers. Like, we're basically making a movie to show off all our best stunt stuff. This is what these guys were doing. They're like, yeah, we do a lot of special effects. Let's do this. Let's show all of our special effects.
Yeah, which the crazy fact is that I think there was 50 effect shots on this. It's everywhere. Like, the fact that like almost every mainline actor in this movie transforms into some creature or changes, and then you have your main character, who the Guyver is played by Jack Armstrong, by the way, for anyone who wants to know. I don't really know much about him or what he has done. He's done a lot of like side stuff. I know he does a lot of TV. Nothing that I really look into.
I don't even think he's in the second one, because I think David Hayter is in the second one. David Hayter took over. The writer actor,
Metal Gear.
And I mean, we'll go through it, but I have some theories on why he didn't come back. But we'll wait to talk about that.
I bet I could guess one of the reasons.
maybe.
So this movie stars Jack Armstrong as our title character, Sean Barker, a.k.a. the Guyver. We have Mark Hamill as CIA agent Max Reed. We have Vivian Wu as Mizuki Segawa. Jeez, I can't even read.
Sagawa.
So, but her, she's called Misky throughout the whole movie by Sean. I thought he was saying Misty. So most of my notes say Misty until I had to go back and correct it because I found out that's not what he was saying.
No.
Jesus. David Gale as Fulton Balkus, which I don't even think his name is.
Balkus?
Yes.
Yeah, he cuffs the balls.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, was his name ever used in the movie?
I think it, I don't know if they said Fulton. Maybe they said Balkus. I'm not sure. But he's, speaking of Reanimator and Bride of Reanimator, I fucking love him in those movies. So seeing him in this, so I'm like, oh, I forgot David Gale's in this. Awesome.
The fact that Reanimator literally ruined his marriage. And he was like, well, I guess I'm just going to continue to play creepy ass guys because now I don't have a wife. Boy, he just goes for it, man. I feel like they were like, hey, remember, this is PG-13. You can only go so far, dude.
Nonsense.
We have Michael Berryman as Lisker. We have Jimmy Walker as MC Stryker. Jimmy Walker, yeah. Or JJ Walker. He was from, oh, what the hell was the show?
Good times.
Good times, yeah.
I know my heat.
Yes.
I was like, is that fucking Jimmy Walker?
He also, according to this, played 5 different characters on the series The Love Boat.
Oh my god. Different...
The Love Boat. Whenever I watch The Love Boat, I'm always like, I hope it's a Jimmy Walker episode.
There you go.
We have Peter Spellos as Ramsey. He was in, I think the only things I remember, he always plays like creepy characters. He was in Men in Black 2.
Okay.
Cowboy Bebop, the movie.
Who the fuck was he in that?
I guess there was a Cowboy Bebop movie. I know he did a lot of anime. He did Ghost in the Shell.
Movie fucking rocks. I just seen that. I was like, what the shit, dude?
He did some Cowboy Bebop from the original series. He did Transformers. He just passed away in November of last year.
Oh, bummer.
That sucks.
We have Spice Williams Crosby as the Swole Weber. She was ripped.
Yeah, she was.
We have William Pugh as Colonel Castle. And then I'm gonna save a couple of the cast members for later when we get to their small roles in this movie. But yeah, this was
Sorry. William Pugh, he is the mayor from RoboCop 2.
Yes, I did see that.
Oh shit, was that the spoiler? My bad.
No.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Fuck it, we're good.
Because I was waiting, like I knew the mayor from RoboCop 2 was in this, and I was waiting for someone to say it, and then no one say it. I'm like, I had to be the one to do it.
No, you could. I mean, look at that bullet, Tony.
I mean, he was in The Color Purple, the original one. From 1985, he was in Toy Soldiers.
We're talking about RoboCop 2 here, okay?
Yes, I mean that's the most important thing. But I figured I'd mention some of his other credits. Puppet Master 5, the final chapter. The final chapter, my ass. There's fucking 10 of them after that, and I'm still suffering through them. Why do I keep
so far? Them? By the way, so far I think Resident Evil: The Final Chapter, as of right now. I know there was a movie after that, but that was a reboot. As of right now, I think that's the one franchise movie where it actually was the final chapter. Until they decide to reboot it and circle back to it. But as of right now, like I think we finally have one that it's the last one.
You're telling me that franchise did something right? It actually ended?
No.
Oh, my God.
They rebooted afterwards. They started over afterwards. So they didn't do a sequel.
I know, we've
That's
talked about all those fucking movies.
They always say it's the last one, and then they're like, never mind, Jason's back.
He's done being a fucking ambulance driver.
I'm still nauseous watching the final chapter. Worst editing ever. God damn it. David Gale's character, Fulton Balkus, is actually named after one of the characters from the manga.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I guess in the manga, he is one of 12 Zoolords, and he is a top scientist for Kronos. I guess he wasn't. What was he in this one? He was just like.
He's a Zoolord.
Was he like the Well, I know he was a Zoolord, but he was like the president of the company, or was he
I think
on the board of directors or something? Or
What, Kronocorps or something? He had a head scrotum. That's all that matters.
And I guess Stephen Baldwin was up for the role of Sean.
Oh, Stephen lost it?
I guess so.
Oh, fuck.
And to be honest, that's all I have for this movie when it comes to like behind the scenes. It had a budget of $3 million, but I have no, I don't know if this was in theaters. So I don't have information on that.
This looks like a direct-to-video movie if I've ever seen one. Yes. I mean, it might have played in theaters, but like not a lot of theaters. It was like Carnosaur 2 or Leprechaun 2. Like, it technically went to theaters, but it was meant for direct-to-video. They thought, if we put it in the theaters, that'll be basically an advertisement for the video release.
Yeah. Speaking of Leprechaun 2, go check out our Leprechaun 2 episode that we released back in St. Patrick's
Day. There you go.
The music was done by Matthew Morse. The music was not memorable in this movie. It was very, very much like you're watching Power Rangers.
Hey, listen, White Ranger Tiger Power will always live in my head forever, so don't give me that shit.
Oh man, I mean, that's about it. Tony, do you got anything, any behind the scenes stuff that you want to add to the little that I just added?
I think I pretty much said, like, it's just another collaboration between people I like. Brian Yuzna, Screaming Mad George, Steve Wang. It does, for some reason, it does have that Stuart Gordon feel, even though Stuart Gordon had nothing to do with this, but it just shows how much of a collaborative effort those movies like From Beyond and Reanimator were. Like, even if one of them are gone, it'll still feel like one of their movies. Yeah, I don't have any other behind the scenes stuff.
So, I mean, the only thing I could add is that Bandai and Hero Communications actually approached Screaming Mad George because of his effects work on Nightmare 4, and he pretty much stated that he would direct the movie if he could get Brian Yuzna to come on as producer, and he also wanted Steve Wang to be a part of it as well. I guess they both did different things. So Screaming Mad George did a lot of the like principal photography and just kind of the basic storyline stuff with the effects work. And Wang did a lot of the action scenes because of the fact that he had done that. You could see it in this movie. I know Power Rangers a little bit after this, right? It's like 93 when it started.
So
you could see kind of the same kind of action.
Although Bandai is a Japanese corporation and Super Sentai was a thing. So I could see them being
like, gets that inspiration.
Think Zoo Ranger, which is the one Power Rangers took the footage from, might have been airing in 1991. So
that makes a lot of sense based on what you see in this movie with the action.
Yeah, this does feel like a very mature Power Rangers, not super mature.
They really hold they really hold back on this. So the version I think that we all saw was the director's cut. The director's, which is weird because from what I've read, is that the theatrical cut of this movie is more violent than the director's cut. They actually cut away from things before you see it. Like, there's parts where limbs are being torn from characters, but you, in our version, you don't actually see it. It like cuts away real quick. You don't see as much blood. I guess there was a lot more blood, a lot more gore in the original theatrical cut.
Actually missed it.
PG-13. So. Yeah. I'm looking here. New Line apparently cut several scenes to focus more on action than humor. I think they wanted to trim it down to, I think they wanted it to be more PG-13. This might be a Leprechaun 1 scenario where I think that film was meant to be PG-13. And someone, a producer at some point, was like, add some gore in. We're making it rated R. And it's like, well, that doesn't really fit with the rest of the film, but okay.
Looks like a damn ABC Family movie. And it still looks like an ABC Family movie with fucking blood and guts in it.
Yeah. I can see someone being like, this might be a little too much for kids and teens, so let's try to push it toward adults. And I'm like, well, I don't think they're going to go for it, but okay, good luck.
Yeah, because the manga actually is very violent. It's crazy. So the fact that they really toned it down as much as they did, it's kind of shocking because I was going into this blind. Like, I really knew nothing about this movie, and sitting down and watching it, I'm just like expecting so much more when it comes to, especially when you have effects by Screaming Mad George. Like, the effects work in this movie are fantastic.
Yeah.
but you're
they
just
look like the monsters. If you remember the ending of Freaked, they look like the monsters at the ending of Freaked, like the big full body suits.
Yeah,
which is cool. There weren't a lot of movies back then where you would have a full creature in a full suit with a lot of screen time that's brightly lit where it doesn't look like shit. So it was a nice balance. Although they never figured out how to make the mouth look like it was actually talking.
Yeah.
That's one thing CGI has on practical effects. If you have a big monster, like their fucking jaws are just flapping up and down. Yeah. I'm like, there's no way that thing is talking.
Oh man. Well, I mean, that's about it for the behind the scenes. So are we ready to hop into this plot? Yes, Dan. Go ahead.
I got one thing I just want to throw out there for the creative side, just really quick. The creator of the Guyver, of the original manga, was Yoshishika Takaya. He started out as a hentai artist.
Oh,
nice. Mad props to that dude. That's the people's art. So thank you, brother. Biggest project from that part of his life was Hades Project, Zeo Reamer, giant robot show full of titties. I don't know, never seen it, never heard of it, but apparently it's a thing. The original Guyver came out in 85, the manga. There was an OVA in 86 called The Guyver Out of Control, anime movie. And then there was a 12 episode anime called The Guyver Bio Booster Armor in 89. Then, of course, we had The Guyver 91 live action and Guyver 2 Dark Hero 94. And then the Guyver Bio Boosted Armor in 2005 to 2006. It was a 26 episode television series.
Wait, live action or cartoon?
No,
or...
anime. Oh, okay. Everything was anime except for the live action stuff that we did here.
Okay.
Which is cool. And then a couple things, a few of the character names outside of David Gale's character were also from the manga, the scientist that dies at the beginning. Tetsu Sagawa, I believe, was also a character from the manga, as well as Lisker. Lisker was actually one of the other, because there's multiple Guyvers that appear in the manga. He is actually I think the Guyver 2.
He's the one who faces off against the actual Guyver.
Yeah. Yeah. So just cool stuff. I'm glad that he was screaming at George, hey, let's keep this shit solid, at least reference the original material and didn't just go, giant iguana running through New York on everybody. But
you leave Zilla alone.
No. But anyway, I just want to throw it out there for anybody that wanted some, if they're want to look into Guyver, because I've known about Guyver forever, but just the anime stuff, I never watched it. I just knew it was a thing.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it just goes like you said, like Tony said, it's like Super Sentai stuff. It's like the Metal Heroes franchise. You guys remember Big Bad Beetleborgs?
Yep. Yes.
That's the Metal Heroes franchise. That's from all that shit. So there's tons of shows like this. It's been there forever. It's just we didn't get it till the 90s. So
it needs to come back, I think.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. We're getting a 4K restoration of this baby out in May.
So I might actually pick that up. I haven't rewatched it. I'm gonna actually pick this one up.
I'm gonna wait because I was checking the pre-order prices, $45. I was like, yeah, I might wait till that drops in price. That's a lot for one.
I'm with you. I didn't like it that much. I'll probably wait.
I'll wait till a sale pops up. All right. Are we ready to hop into the plot of the Guyver? All right, Dan, are you ready to the cheesiest part of this show? We changed it up, Tony. We have a really weird introduction, so here we go. Ready?
Okay.
Let's dissect.
Dissect.
That.
Film.
Movie. Oh, fuck.
Yes! Film.
Never goes right. But you know what? We move on. So the beginning of this movie is a title crawl, which was not in the theatrical cut, by the way. This is a director's cut edition where it opens up with this weird narration about the aliens coming to Earth, and they are trying to create these human super soldiers, and there are Zoolords, and I guess what are they called? Zoonoids is what these super soldiers are called.
Yeah, Zoonoids.
Yeah, it's zoophiles,
And so they put...
Right here with you, keep going.
And so they have one of these Zoolords open, he pretty much inserts them into Kronos Core. And they are trying to find the unit. This all sounds so fucking
somebody's
stupid.
Unit.
By the way, the opening title, it reminded me of there are some movies where it was decided after the fact, they're like, this might confuse people. Let's have an opening thing that explains everything. One of them was fucking Theodore Rex. Opens up with a title crawl that basically spoils the twist of the film and explains the plot. Same thing with Dark City. Dark City's great, but the theatrical cut spoils the whole, like, secret twist right in the opening. And another one of the ones that famously didn't work was Zardoz, which I got a physical copy of Zardoz recently. I'm real excited.
Go ahead. Sorry, good, Tony. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Where they added the thing in the beginning where the character Zardoz is trying to, like, explain this world and everything. When you watch it, you're like, now I'm even more confused. What the fuck was that?
Wait, Zardoz, the Sean Connery movie?
Yes.
Where it's like him wearing the weird bikini thing? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. His name's not Zardoz. Zardoz is a different guy. But anyway, this is reminding me of that, where, like, maybe in test screenings, because all the information they say we learn later in the film.
Yes.
But they're probably like, people might get confused and check out at that point. Say all this shit in the beginning.
This reminds me of, like, 65 when they put the plot twist in the trailers.
Oh, yeah, which the directors were, like, pissed about.
Yes.
Well, the directors are also pissed that the movie revealed the marketing revealed dinosaurs were in it. I'm like, well, dude, I mean, you should probably let people know dinosaurs are in your movie.
Yeah, just a little.
So, yeah. So the unit, if you have it, becomes the Guyver.
I have a unit. It's not great.
Yes, I know. That's what I was thinking.
If you'd like to see Tony's unit, please go to his spicy site.
Oh, yeah. Slash Hack movies. Anyway, sorry, Parker. You were talking about units.
No, yes. I'm done talking about them. and Dr. Sagawa has stolen the Guyver.
Oh,
this movie's been tainted for me now.
Why?
You just ruined it. You just ruined it because you kept calling it the unit, and now I think of Beavis and Butthead to America. Where's the unit?
So the doctor is clearly running from someone, and he's got the briefcase that has the Guyver inside. So he needs to switch it out, or he needs to hide it. So he puts it in, like, a lunchbox that's just in a corner.
Just by some trash.
Yeah. So it's perfectly good plastic lunchbox. Why? Who's throwing that away? So he then is running away from the bad guys that are up in a van up on the bridge there. Dude, he takes a tumble down the side of the LA River.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that don't look like he did that on purpose. That looks like he actually tripped and fell down that hill.
Just keep it in.
The LA River sneaks up on you. It's so easy to miss.
Why do they keep calling it a river when there's no fucking water ever in that thing? This once was the river.
He was new to LA, and he's like, oh, I'll jump into the river. He didn't realize that it rarely has water.
Yeah, he completely missed the giant ants that live down there.
The giant ants, the T-1000 comes out around the corner. Jesus, what is happening in LA?
John Travolta is riding Grease Lightning.
So we meet Michael Berryman's character, Lisker.
Yeah.
We then see the doctor transform into the creature from the Black Lagoon, or a weird variation of him.
By the way, it takes them a really long, I know this is a thing in Sentai stuff, but it takes them a really long time to transform. And the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, in the middle of his transformation, why don't the other guys just run up and start punching him before he finishes transforming?
Because it's so cool to watch him transform, they're just in awe. They're like, wow.
I saw a meme about that with, like, Power Rangers, where they start transforming and the bad guys are, like, waiting. It's like, just shoot them while they're transforming.
This is the same thing that I always would talk about with Transformers. So,
yeah.
So, because you talk about how it takes so long for him to transform, but yet in the rest of the movie when these guys transform, it's pretty quick. It's like, it's off camera, but they, like, you can hear the noises, and then they come out of the shadows and they're transformed. It's exactly like Transformers from 2007. Optimus Prime takes 10 minutes to fucking transform that first time when he shows Sam and Michaela that who he is. But then the rest of the movie, he's like, transforms so fast. You're like, what the hell? So yeah, I think that's just how it goes. You want to see that awesome effects work with him turning into this creature. But then immediately Lisker turns into his own whatever animal hybrid lizard thing that at first
he looked like he had a unit on his head. I don't know if you guys
he did
One of them's got the fucking elephant trunk.
Yeah, dude.
Okay, speaking of the elephant, sorry. But Brian Yuzna, he produced the Conan the Adventurer live action show in the 90s, which is Conan the Barbarian. It was basically trying to cash in on the Hercules popularity.
Yeah.
Michael Berryman shows up as a wizard in that show at some point. But the first episode has like a weird elephant man. And it was reminding me of that. I'm like, wow, this guy really likes elephant monsters.
Oh, he does. You got to hear it all the time. Yeah. Every time he attacks,
literally, the first episode has an elephant man in it. And I'm looking at the elephant man in this. I'm like, you got to be kidding me again.
All the noises that these guys make in this movie, I was cackling. Awesome. I'm like, oh my gosh.
So it just keeps
going over and over.
So after Lisker transforms, he beats the shit out of the doctor, and the doctor's defeated, and then just deflates. Like, he literally deflates.
That's right. He like turns into goo or something.
Well, you don't see him turn into goo. You see the goo later when they go up to it where his body is, and they're like,
that looks like
a dead body for weeks. But before, he just looked like he just lost all the air in his body and just sank into the floor.
So I got to say this for all like the hardcore tofu people, like Kamen Rider and shit. This is what makes me think of. In the original Kamen Rider, when they'd beat like a bad guy, they would like dissolve into bubbles. And then they did the newest Shin Kamen Rider movie, which, and they do the same thing, but they try to rationalize it. And that's what this made me think of. Like, there's a light explanation of why they die. They turn into foam. We didn't get that in this movie, but that's what made me think of.
We then cut to a dojo. We meet one of the most boring characters in this movie, who is our main character, Sean.
Look, that is my problem with this. He's not he's probably a good actor, but in this movie, he's not really the most charismatic. I can see why they replace him later. But my biggest issue going forward with this is like, we don't really know enough about Sean or get to relate to him or learn about for like a superhero origin story. He's just kind of there. We know all about the girl and her dad and Mark Hamill, but like Sean is supposed to be the hero and he's just so bland and there's nothing to him. So like trying to be invested in him is really hard.
Yeah.
Cause we know nothing about him before he gets in that suit. And then he's in that suit for a while. He rarely comes out of the suit, so you kind of forget that he's a person at one point.
Yeah.
It's like the biggest problem with this is like if they did like the first Spider-Man movie and it was all about Mary Jane and like Peter's like, I got bit by a spider, and then he's just in the Spider-Man suit for the whole film. It's like we probably should have gotten to know more about that guy. But that's my problem with him in this. He's just really bland.
What? See, The funny thing is where we're watching him fight, we watch him fight this one guy. But for some reason, when I just glanced over the rest of this class, they all looked like children. And it just reminds me of that episode of Seinfeld where Kramer is literally is talking about how he's learning karate.
You're fighting children. We're at the same level, though. The same level.
Can we go get ice cream?
Ice cream. By the way, my favorite thing about this dojo is that apparently it has a soundproof room with a window where you can just tell someone their parents died. It's like when you go to church and they have like the baby proof room so the kids don't scream during church. This karate dojo has a viewing or soundproof room. That's real cute. Normally, in a normal script, you'd be like, all right, we'll have our hero demonstrating his martial arts skills. And then we'll do another scene where the girl learns about her dead dad. This movie, they're like, no. We'll put them both at the same time. The dojo will have the crying your dad's dead room. And we'll just shoot those scenes at the same time. Like, that is not how you do this at all. This is ridiculous.
Well,
I know you want to make the movie fast. It's only 88 minutes, but those could have been two scenes. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, the funny thing is so Miski shows up. And Sean just leaves, like he's in the middle of fighting and just walks away from his fight to just awkwardly flirt with her. I don't even know if they're a thing at this point. I think he just is going to give her a ride home and not the ride home he wants. But then we see Mark Hamill's character come in, Max Reed, and you're like, sweet. This is the character I care about.
Yep.
I mean, I care about him, a lot more than this Sean guy, but I just wish things were different. And he's
really,
looking.
He really probably should have been the Guyver. We spent way more time with him and that girl.
The funniest thing
Sean
is that
into the grasshopper.
This movie only came out what 7-8 years after Return of the Jedi. Damn, yeah. When did his voice change so drastically? Because yeah. He already has that like really deep, like almost Joker voice.
Is Mark Hamill a smoker?
I don't know.
That could be it.
That could be it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it, I mean, it's when did the animated series start for Batman? 92?
92.
Yeah, around 92. Yeah. Okay. Because it was after Batman Returns.
Right. So, yeah, he brings Miski into the room to tell her that her, you know, what her dad was involved in. The funniest thing is he tells her everything other than the fact that her dad's dead. She is literally bent over the desk crying to the point where it's like she probably knows. And he goes, "Oh, yeah. Your dad's dead." And you're like, clearly, she fucking knows this already. She clearly knows this. Okay, man. Oh, God. So,
also,
of course,
how did he? It didn't look like she was like attending that karate dojo.
No.
I think she was just there to ride home. And I'm like, how did he know she was going to be there?
He just walks in.
Did her dad go like, sometimes she goes to the karate dojo to hang out with her not boyfriend. If I ever die, go there.
Oh, God.
They should just set it at a juice bar.
Yeah.
In Angel Grove.
Yeah.
Yes. Easier.
So, Sean, of course, during this whole thing is very distracted. He gets his ass kicked by this one dude. The only guy he fights in this dojo. He gets his ass kicked.
His name's Craig.
Yeah.
Is that I think he's credited as Craig.
I missed his name.
Craig should have been the guy for
yeah.
He was more prepared.
But I love how he's like, well, he of course picks a fight with this kid, and then the dojo instructor is just like, you need to chill the fuck out. All right. And he's like, all right, whatever. And he leaves. And I'm like, I'm waiting for him to like hop on a motorcycle, get in a cool car. No, he hops on a little fucking scooter. Just drives away. You're like, oh boy, they're not trying very hard. I guess they're making it so it's like, this is a loser, and he's gonna become this
Sam
really
Raimi
cool guy.
This off for Spider-Man 2.
He does, because there's a scene in this movie that is identical to a scene in Spider-Man.
Sam Raimi saw that scooter and he's like, that's what my Peter Parker will ride.
Yes,
there you go.
100% is. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
Sam Raimi was just on set at one point during this movie, just like hanging out.
He's probably friends with them, to be honest. Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if that wasn't the case.
I mean, this was like Dark. What was this? This was Darkman era. Raimi,
yeah,
right.
It was like Darkman, Hercules, the Legendary Journey era. Sam Raimi.
Oh my god, I forgot he directed that.
I was such a big fan of that show.
I wonder if like Sean here is like as much of a like pussy fiend in like the second one as he is at this one, because like they could have named the third Guyver like Guyver Pussy Hunter.
I would 100% watch Guyver Pussy Hunter.
I wonder why we don't have a lot of women listeners.
No, they have to change it for censorship reasons. It just works as cat rescue or something. Okay.
Angela just shaking her head.
I have no choice. I have to be here. So I have to listen to it.
Yeah. Yes. I pay you handsomely. You need to be here. Oh my god. So this is another thing that was added for the director's cut, that weird tear transition.
What oh my god!
I was like, "What is happening?" But I guess that
they,
was something they had to do.
Musical sting each
yeah.
time.
Like, you feel like you're watching a show.
Like... We were like, "Where did the music come from?" I was like, "What is this?"
It's like it wasn't even like it was transitioned into like a crazy scene. It was just the scene just cut. You could have just did a fade or nothing. Said it was like.
So we are at Cronus.
Can you, sorry, when you're editing this, can you cut in like an Austin Powers transition in between? It's like between scenes, just Austin Powers, like, do.
I will try my best. I do not put as much into editing as you do, Tony. But I will try. As I'm listening, I'm like, oh shit.
I'll do it for you, you son of a bitch. Okay, I'll do it tonight.
If you send me that file, it will be in the episode. Oh, man. So we're at Kronos. We meet Fulton Bulkus, played by David Gale, and he gets a delivery. But it's not the delivery he wanted, because he opens it up, and it's a toaster. And then he fucking makes Lisker beat the shit out of each other. And all I could think of is the scene from Liar Liar when the guy walks in. He's like, what are you doing? I'm kicking my own ass. That's literally. And he has the weird thing coming out of his forehead. He's got that third eye going on.
I we made many Star Wars references just because of that.
I did think it was mean. I think he said, like, I want to make sure you don't hurt a hair on your head. I'm like, he's bald.
I was like, yeah, really he has mean. No hair. Yeah,
that's not nice. Because Michael Behrman, he had a rough childhood because he has some sort of condition that I guess he had to get, like, cranial reconstructive surgery when he was a kid. And that's why, you know... he looks the way he does, and
yeah
and he was always cast as like that weird character. I mean, he was in the original Hills Have Eyes, he was also supposed to be in The Crow.
I
saw the trailer for the new Crow, and I'm like, man, I hope that Skull Cowboy's in this new version. It looks like it's just some dude. I'm like, oh, you finally had a chance to do a Skull Cowboy, and instead it's just some guy with a beard. Awesome.
Don't worry, Tony. Wait, did they take the Skull Cowboy? A million people who are pissed off about that trailer.
Well, the Skull Cowboy was supposed to be in the first Crow movie, but they had to cut all his scenes.
Oh.
Yeah, because they weren't able to finish his scenes, and there wasn't like enough. So like we could just kind of just get rid of this character.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But I was hoping the new movie would have the Skull Cowboy, and it looks like his spirit guide is just a guy in like a suit jacket. I'm like, oh, fuck this.
That's lame. Come on.
Don't worry. Everybody in the fucking world is mad about that trailer.
Look, if they remade the Guyver, you'd want the Mark Hamill character to turn into a grasshopper, right?
Yes!
You don't want him to be like, oh, I just died a normal death. It's like, no, we want him to be a grasshopper, man.
His skin just gets a little like itchy and like rashy, and then he dies. Like,
he just starts peeling. Oh no! One of my legs broke.
the disease he suffers, or condition he suffers from, I'm not even going to try and say it, but it leaves him with no sweat glands, hair, fingernails, or teeth.
Oof!
So that's a big. So
he has dentures then.
Yeah. Yep.
I noticed I met him back in like September. I do notice he has no fingernails and whatnot, but yeah, that's gotta be a bummer. Yeah.
Well, they zoomed in on his hand a few times, and I was like,
yeah,
is that for the movie or is he just like that?
Oh, I didn't know. Like that. Yeah, that was the same way. I was like, oh, is that an effector?
Is that how all Zoinoids are? I don't know. Is he a prototype? What's going on?
Yeah, that is a little bizarre. It's like, wait, why does he look like that? And that, but the other ones just look like regular people. It's a little confusing.
Oh, man. So, of course, Sean follows Reed and Miski to the crime scene where her dad died. And we also meet Colonel Castle, who's just a dick. He literally comes up. I do like the line he says to Mark Hamill where he's just like, you're still chasing Ninja Turtles. And I was like, ow! He does say that, right? I didn't hear something different.
No, right? Somebody, you're right. He does say that.
He's okay.
It'd be better if Hamill turned to him. He's like, no, I'm looking for street sharks. And it just cuts away.
Oh, live action street shark? Oh, my God. I would watch that in a heartbeat. Damn. And while all this is happening, Sean finds the lunchbox with the Guyver inside. And, of course, he doesn't know what it is, so he just kind of takes it away. And, of course, he looks up, and Lisker is, like, you know, surveying the area, and he's able to sneak away. Miski is very confused. Listen, I understand you find out your dad died. You're going to be grieving and kind of, you know, a little more than usual. But she is yelling this entire movie. Like, she is, like, there is no talking. It is every line of dialogue this actress does is just yelling. And you're just like, Jesus, I mean, at least back the mic up so it's just over.
It's not even like her, I could see her being upset. It's not even like her dad died. It's like her dad died and turned into goo. Like, what the fuck?
I didn't even get to say goodbye.
Yeah, and it was unexpected. Like, he's only so much you can handle.
She bends down, kisses his gooey forehead. Did you see the gooey forehead through her mouth?
No. Sorry, touch your dad's fish paste.
But yeah, she's very confused why her dad would be involved in the Skyver. And it was like, well, maybe because Mark Hamill tells you he was a research scientist and he was doing research on the Skyver. So that's why he was involved in this.
Why would he have such a thing? He's just a research scientist.
Why would he be doing that? He's a research scientist. And if I was Mark Hamill, I'd be like,
it's probably part of his research.
Did you notice your dad eating fish flakes at home? Any strange behavior like that?
Yeah, my goldfish have been dead. I don't know why. I keep feeding them.
The dad's over there.
Oh. I thought it was weird that I hatched from an egg instead of just being born like all the other kids. So that was bizarre.
Is this normal?
Oh, man. So we're back with Lisker and his group, Stryker, Ramsey, and the Beefcake Weber. They're trying to find the Skyver. And, of course, Stryker loves to rap. And he comes up with a rap about recycling and being nice. Because Weber is not very nice to him.
I love it.
Fucking killed me. This feels like OG Power Rangers. Like, top to fucking bottom. Like, right here. Like, this goofy shit. Like, I don't mind a movie being goofy, but this goofy shit feels like fucking Saban era early Power Rangers.
So good.
Where's Bulk and Skull, dude? Just wait for him to strut the fuck on in.
This is one of my favorite scenes of this entire movie. So Sean, I'm guessing, is trying to go home, but he drives down clearly an alleyway he doesn't want to go down, but he goes pretty far down this alleyway and then stops, turns off his scooter, and then tries to turn it back on to then it does not turn back on. Oh my God, why did you go down the alleyway and then turn off your scooter?
Made sense to me. I don't know what the problem is here.
Hey guys, time to check the starter. Oh no.
But this is probably my favorite scene. The yellow bandana gang. Oh,
yeah. It's the yellow turbans. It's the fucking yellow turbans from Big Trouble Little China.
Oh, like,
is this a reference? Is this a reference? But they're bad guys now.
Oh man.
Dude, they're ridiculous. This whole scene. They're like talking and they have like a whole choreographed thing and a pre. I'm like, this is great. I miss like weird 90s punks, like gangs, like the glow in the dark gang from the Batman Forever movie.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's just weird punks like that.
But it's always that thing where the character, you know, he does his like kung fu stance and they're all like making fun of him, calling him Kung Fu Man. And then he just gets his ass kicked. He like it's always the thing where the guy tries to run away and you always got the guy who grabs him, holds him, and he gets punched in the stomach, thrown against the fence. Yeah. And then the Skyver falls out of his bag and he gets thrown on the ground and then his head gets like hit into it and it goes into his forehead.
Planted into it.
Yeah, it rubs the unit on his forehead. It's a terrible mushroom print. It just doesn't let go.
No, he was just trying to lick it.
Well, boy, this transformation is gnarly as he becomes the Skyver for the first time. And they're all, I love the reaction shot where it's just like, it goes up to the gang as they're just like, what?
They're another one. They watch this go on for a while.
Yeah.
No one's like, oh my God, grab his wallet. Let's get out of here. No. Like, what's going on?
His pants are still on the ground. Just get him.
No, they're just over there tapping their toes. Like, are you done?
They're
yet?
Waiting for the transformation to be done for them to get their ass kicked by this thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's so good.
I would have just been running away from minute.
Just grab my belt pad and just, oh, he just didn't turn the ignition on. And just drive.
Here, let me help you. Let me help you. Oh, but I love the whole thing where the one guy, the one who talks the most, he whips out the nunchuck and he's doing the thing and he drops it and he takes out the switchblade. He's like threatening him and then he drops the switchblade. But then the one guy calls him RoboCop and I'm like, boy, they're just going to drop all these just references to other better movies.
Yes.
You think all RoboCop movies, like, is better than the guy for...
Maybe.
Shockingly.
I didn't know this show was known for its hot takes, But okay.
Oh, right? No shit.
That's what we do. That's what we do here. Yeah.
It's getting spicy.
Oh, Lord. And I love that it takes the entire fight. He kicks all of their asses and then realizes what he is. He's like, oh, because he sees his reflection like a hubcap. What am I? And I was like, what?
Oh, excuse me? I'm the monster.
It took you that. He literally, during the fight, takes out the blade that comes out of his arm.
Yeah.
You didn't figure it out then? That you weren't you?
That's like
he wasn't paying attention.
That's like his main thing is the elbow blade.
Which
like,
he
that's
does.
Like
I don't think he hits.
Weapon.
Does he hit anyone with that thing throughout the entire movie?
Yeah, he slices one of them, and then the main bad guy.
Tony's favorite scene. Right. Yes. Yes.
Right in the eye.
Yes. I have it in bold in my notes. When yeah, we get to that part.
That's like his thing. It's like, yeah, I have to just elbow people. That's my thing.
It's almost like the people's elbow.
Yeah. The Rock saw this movie and he went, I got it. Do an elbow drop. And then someone said, that's kind of a lame finisher. He's like, I'll do a bunch of goofy shit before I do it. And they're like, perfect, Rock. You got it.
Man, he's really selling that. I'm in.
Oh, then you find out that screaming, I guess, turns him back into his human form because he like screams in pain or he screams in agony or whatever. Oh, God, it's so funny. So we're back with Bulkus and he's talking with Lisker and Lisker tells him about the whole switcheroo. And he's like, I don't fucking care about whatever this switcheroo thing is. Just go get the Guyver. And then you find out he's using the lunchbox he got out of the case.
Oh, yeah, he's using the toaster.
Yeah, he's using the toaster.
He burns his toast.
Yeah.
He's not going to let it go to waste. Why would he do that?
I blame him. Efficiency, but come on.
He also tasks Lisker to go get Miski because she's Sagawa's daughter. So we then get a Spider-Man 1 moment in The Guyver, which, of course, this movie came out, 11 years before the first Spider-Man? Where we get the same scene where he wakes up and he's kind of like checking himself out, like, I feel different. But
like
it only lasts.
Fuck now, like, oh, God. He had to take the glasses off. And he's like, oh.
But it only lasts like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, was that in Spider-Man 1? Did he like.
No, he should have.
His pants? He's like, oh, shit. Like a natural shoot
my wrist, though. Needs to get everybody pregnant.
But again, Sam Raimi, he knew a lot of these horror guys. He probably saw this and again was like, stealing that for my movie.
If I ever meet Sam Raimi, I'm going to ask him if Spider-Man 1 was influenced by the Guyver. And if he says yes, I might faint. Like that'd be like, oh my God.
One of the horror cons near us is going to have Ted Raimi. You think I can ask Ted Raimi?
He might know. I mean, he was involved. He was involved. I mean, he wasn't doing anything other than being in the movie, but I mean, he knows. He probably knows everything. So we then are with the CIA guys. We're with Colonel Douchebag and Max Reed. And I love how they're coming out. He's like, you didn't even say anything to him. You didn't even push him to get any information. Like, nah, we got enough. You're crazy. You're just chasing, you know, shadows and all that stuff. Mm. And Castle just sucks. But then you figure out later why he sucks.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean goes back to Miski's apartment and they're about to do some stuff. But then he's cock blocked by his dojo instructor. And I'm like, that bitch. That bitch. Really? Of all the times to show up. And I love how Miski's literally like, she's not going to be here very long. And he's like, I'm going to go get food and I'll come back. And he never comes back. Well, no, he does come back, but that's when she gets taken.
No, this is how it should have gone. Sean should be like, man, there's enough Guyver to go around, baby.
That's the thing. He doesn't even. I think the funny thing is when he goes through the transformation, sees who he is and all that stuff, like she talks about the Guyver to him and he's just like, what? What is that? I mean, I know he doesn't know what it's called, but.
Yeah.
Maybe you should tell the girl that you want to be clear. Like, are they boyfriend, girlfriend? Close enough. Maybe you should tell her that you transformed into a Power Ranger last night. Like, she might be interested in that fact. Or 5 minutes ago. How long ago was this?
he should be telling everyone about his powers, but the problem is that the Blue Beetle movie didn't exist yet, so they didn't know to rip off that scene.
My 12-year-old asked me, "What are you watching?" And I said, "It's called The Guyver." And he's like, "What is it about?" And I said, "It's Blue Beetle before Blue Beetle."
Except he doesn't have a family. That makes his dynamic like more interesting. Yeah. Just him being a fucking weirdo, not knowing what's going on.
You know what? That's why I thought the Blue Beetle was okay. I'm like, you know what? This is basically The Guyver. Basically The Guyver.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wasn't as good as The Guyver, but yeah, it was all right.
That's fair.
At least the main character wasn't boring like Sean.
See, I haven't seen that movie. My experience is I have the whole comic run, the first time A. Reyes comic run. It's fucking fantastic. That's what I'm my basis.
Quick review of Blue Beetle. It's a fun movie. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just, I like the side characters are the best part of the movie. Like, yeah, the supporting characters are fun.
It's too generic for this day and age. Like, in an age where, like, the superhero stuff is becoming real stale, you can't just put out a generic one. You can get away with that, like, 8-9 years ago. But now it's like, you got to, like, do something different.
Yeah.
Ugh. But, yeah. Anyway, sorry. We're talking about Blue Beetle. We got to get back to Guyver.
Yeah, clearly.
I know. I got so much left to talk about. So he goes out for food. He comes back. Miski's gone. His dojo instructor's dead. He has no care in the world that his dojo instructor is dead. He's like, "Oh shit, Miski!" Like, screams her name.
He walks in and, like, you like see her playing his day in the middle of the room. It's not like you fucking miss her. That's where I would have
went. No, I mean, he sees her. He runs around the corner because he thinks it's Miski, but then he realizes it's not, and he's just like, "Miski!" Oh, he just doesn't care.
It's that other person.
She told me to chill the fuck out. I'm getting out of here. Fuck that bitch. And I love how the guys who take her, like Lisker and his little group there, they take her downstairs and they have her for about 15 seconds because Sean comes downstairs. And I love that it all happens with everyone in the same spot because Max shows up. He's about 5 inches from those guys. Well, hey, how's it going, gentlemen? And then he comes behind and Sean hits them both with 2 bottles in front of Max.
Three Stooges style. Like, what the fuck's going on here?
He takes Miski, they run away. I love how Max is just like, at first he's like, "What the hell are you doing?" And then he's like, "All right, I'm part of your group. Let's go."
My favorite part about this scene is, like, Max is like, "Weapon," and then fucking Lisker's like, "Weapon," and they're like, they dance around each other pointing weapons, like, "Is anybody gonna fire? What's going on?" Like,
no,
approaching, like,
no.
Nobody's doing anything.
They just run away. He just runs. Bye.
Yeah, just run.
But it's funny because there is literally a point where Lisker is like rounding a corner, and you can still see them running, even if Max turns around and fires. Like, Lisker should be shooting them, and he's just running down the alleyway, like, "Come back." Oh, man. But this is when Stryker decides he's going to transform into his form. And that is a fucking giant gremlin. Like, he's just a giant gremlin. And he's got super speed.
He looks like Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah. He's a mix of Jar Jar Binks.
The floppy ears. The fish ears. Yeah.
A mix of Jar Jar Binks and a gremlin.
He's the best of the monsters, was that MC Stryker.
And his fucking bugged out eyes. Like, what's going on?
Yeah, and that guy is cool as hell.
he's got super speed of some sort, and he jumps over the fence that they just climbed over, and he lands in front of Linnea Quigley, who screams for no joke 30 straight seconds. It goes on for so long. I think it woke up my 2-year-old. My 2-year-old literally woke up, walked out of his bedroom, looked at the TV, going, like, in his head, I could just imagine him going, "What the hell is that?" And then wanders away.
She's screaming for. That's why she's credited as the scream queen.
Yeah.
I did not realize that was her at all.
She's really?
Yeah. Didn't click for me.
As soon as she showed up, like, it's Linnea Quigley.
Yeah. I mean, you got to think this is, what, 8 years after Silent Night, Deadly Night? This is, 6 years after Return of the Living Dead, which you can't have to. That movie is one of those movies where you can't tell it's Linnea Quigley. You just know it is her based on the credits. Yeah. But yeah, you definitely tell. This is what seeing her in this movie is what you would see of her now. Like, she looks very much like she does now.
I just think of that Thanksgiving movie we fucking talked about with her in it.
The Last Thanksgiving.
Yeah, the last fucking Thanksgiving.
I talked to the director of that movie on Twitter all the time.
Yeah, we did.
Sorry, Tony, go ahead.
No, she's nice. I saw her a few years ago at one of the Mahoning events. She was really nice.
Yeah, she's definitely somebody I'd love to meet. She's a she's a horror icon.
And she's great in this. Just screaming. Oh, yeah. But it's awkward because you find out it's a film set and the guy's like giving notes to the monster. He's like, no, you're supposed to do this. It's like, is no one like, wait, that's not what our monster's supposed to look like.
Well, yeah, he checks later because there's the dude in the costume. He's like, shit, what was that? Like, what did I do?
Like, how did you not notice that?
Was this the
completely different colors?
Was this the first take and the director didn't like sign off on what the monster looked like? I know it's there for the gag, but I'm just like starting to think about the logistics of it.
They're also filming in this like dark, dirty alleyway. So it's like,
it's like the set of Friday the 13th Part 8. Like, what the fuck's going on here, dude?
And MC, and by the way, Stryker is just confused for a long time, and it's how the other guys get away. Because he's like, wait, what? Where am I? What's going on?
Yeah, he's just rolling with it. He's like, yeah, I'll do that. Like,
I love, though, when he transforms, his chains get bigger. Like, he's wearing chains. He transforms. His chains are huge. He definitely wasn't wearing big chains like that in human form. Okay. So Miski tells Sean about the guy when he's like, the what? And this is when all the bad guys change into their animal hybrid forms. We have Weber turns into like a furry creature of some sort.
Yeah.
Ramsey turns into the elephant guy who every time he makes a move, he just makes the elephant sound.
We were wondering why you could always hear him sniff, like you could hear his nose.
They had it like moving around, which I thought was pretty cool.
But it was the noise he made, so I'm like, man, he needs to go see a doctor for that. I'm not sure he can breathe.
I'm gonna spoil the movie for later for you guys. This whole movie, I was expecting that trunk just to get ripped off, and he just lose all of his powers.
He spins around like the Killer Clown.
Yes.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the Flicks and Friends podcast. I'm Dustin.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Sean. Join us each week as we sift through movies and discuss a variety of theme months and determine whether they're blockbusters or blockbusted.
Previous themes include Animation Month, 80s horror, and under 10% on Rotten Tomatoes, just to name a few. We have weekly guests, fan favorites, and new guests happen all the time over here. So buckle up and enjoy the ride.
But until next time, I'm still Dustin.
And I'm still Paul.
And I'm Sean.
And this is the Flicks and Friends podcast.
So this is when like the, you know, they're trying to run away from the creatures, and Mark Hamill only has, I guess, 3 bullets in his gun because he fires 3 times and then has no more bullets. But yet, I don't think he fired his gun at all before then. So way to go, Mark. Way to go, Max.
Maybe that was a deleted scene of him just like, he was bored and he was just shooting it off in the air.
Maybe. It's an M9. He should have an M92. He should have at least 15 shots in it. 16 is just one of the chamber.
Yeah.
Clearly he's been using it and just forgot to change the clip.
Like, I don't need to reload this. Fuck that.
So Castle and his guy, so the CIA dick and his like crony who doesn't say a word, they transform into awful looking creatures. One of them is like this flaily little fucking dinosaur looking thing that looks like he is in constant pain. He is, kill me, please. He's the first one who gets taken out too. He's like, oh, poor guy. He's been in the movie for 5 seconds.
Do you think Seth Brundle was a Zoonoid? The fly? Holy shit, do you think he started it? Like, he was the first Zoonoid?
They all said it was aliens, but it was actually just a dude experimenting.
Well, maybe he inadvertently tapped into their technology, and that's how it happened.
You're retconning the fly?
Yes.
That's what the Fly 2 should have been about. Should have been just it's the bridge between the fly and the Guyver.
The Guyver.
Yeah, yes, please. Or the Guyver just shows up in the fly too and just fucking murks him.
That monster in the fly too. It could probably give the Guyver a run for its money. The fly in the fly one, that was just like a sad monster. That thing wasn't gonna take off anytime soon. But the fly two was spitting acid and shit. That thing was awesome.
We need to do it, man.
Yeah, we gotta cover that one. This is when Sean turns into the Guyver and he just I am the Guyver. why do people have to announce who they are? I guess this was the point too. Yet. I guess this was the point, yeah, to show the bad guys that he is the Guyver. So they're like, oh, shit, yeah. I guess we got to go after that guy.
Cool transformation sequence, first off, I think. Secondly, I'm upset there's not, like, some dance to it. You know, like, with the party, you're like, you know, like, we don't have any of that. Like,
no, you just, they just show his neck, and you see the little things moving around in his neck, and then it just shoots out. Oh, it was really cool.
His STD has on the back of his neck. I don't know where this came from, but...
And of course, he turns into the Guyver. What's the first thing Stryker does? He starts rapping about him.
He's got.
I didn't write down any of his words. I didn't write down any of his raps.
He has one shtick. He's got to do it. All right.
Yeah.
He's good at it.
He's just doing his job. Like
the other guy smells things. The girl is the dude's girlfriend, and he's
forgot to mention that
she's got some perfectly round boobies.
Yeah, that's a monster. Your monster tits.
So. Yeah. She's the sex appeal, but only in monster form.
She appeals to both men and women and furries, so it's all of them.
She is all the demographics here.
Was this an awakening for someone seeing that girl turn into a furry
monster?
You think that would have played
it? Absolutely.
Played with the idea in their head, and like 20 something years later, they're like, wait a minute. I want to be in a big furry suit.
I could be a fuzzy owl with tits. Anybody.
I do like the face on her. It's her character. I just don't like the rest of the body. It's weird.
I mean, admittedly, all these things look kind of weird, but like the
said it was weird as if there was a normal one.
Well, wait, okay. Her face is awesome, but then she has like no feathers or anything like right here.
Yeah,
where are we going with this?
It's like a cheap ape suit, but they changed it put a different head on. Yeah.
And boobs.
Yes.
It's King Kong Lives. It's the follow up.
Oh God. The Queen Kong. Oh God.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Dan is still mad we didn't cover that movie.
Yeah, it's our Patreon's fault. Fuck you guys. Just kidding.
Look, listen, you gave them the options to pick.
Look, I watched that movie a few years ago, man. You're fine. You don't need to revisit it. You can let that one slide. There's a reason that one never gets talked about.
Like, you remember that time Kong got a heart transplant? No, let's not talk about it ever again.
You're right. Everything else is like a scaly, weird monster. She's the only one that's like a Sasquatch.
Yeah, literally.
It feels like, was this like a suit for something else? They're like, just throw it in this fucking movie.
They ran out of suits and they're like, this work. This is fine. Listen, let's go with this.
Somebody from up top said, we need sex appeal. Well, we can give one of the monsters tits. Do it. Okay.
It's got to be tasteful, though. This is PG-13.
She gets killed in this scene, right? With the elbow.
She does.
Blade.
Yeah. Well, before that, you have the long fight scene that just goes back and forth between the Guyver and all the different characters, and then the Guyver, Lisker figures out what the Guyver's weakness is, and that's the giant pearl on his forehead, because he headbutts him, and that's what kind of makes him all weird. And he's like, oh yeah, that's what your weakness is.
You do have a weakness.
It's his intellectual clitoris.
At least somebody can find it.
Yes,
that's why it's a guy and it's on his head. That's why you can find it.
By the way, I didn't realize the things on the side of his head were like extra eyes that like move back to look behind him.
I just like the things that excrete like steam out of him.
What the fuck?
Fire extinguishers.
I was gonna say, does he have an engine? What was that?
He's blown off steam. He got a little overheated.
Oh my God. So he starts getting his ass kicked, but then he is able to, he like uses his arm blade and slices at Weber, but he thinks he killed Miski. So he's all that's kind of where the other guys get the upper hand and subdue him.
He's like, did I do? It's like, do you want to check first? You want to like shake her a little bit? He's like,
No, I know what I did.
Why? I know she's dead. She's sleeping.
It's like the Steward of Gondor, Return of the King, where they're like, no, your son's alive. And he's like, this is the saddest day. He's literally breathing. He's like, put him on the fire. It's like, Guyver is literally doing that.
Yeah.
And look, Peter Jackson, you know, he watched a lot of horror movies. He probably saw the Guyver and said, yes, that is what I will do for Return of the King.
I'll do it.
His secret meeting with Sam Raimi, where they were all coming up with ideas to rip off from the guy.
I got this idea for a Sumerian rat monkey. Now you can keep that one, Peter Jackson. I don't need that one. That's not going to fit with Spider-Man.
I could just see him having a round table meeting, like everybody.
What do you got?
What did the Guyver do that we can rip off?
Why do we keep talking about the Guyver?
So she's dead.
Yeah, she's dead. He gets subdued. He gets the pearl ripped out of his forehead and he turns into mush. But of course, Max comes and saves Miski because she's not dead, but Weber is.
Well, he was about to do a special move too.
Yeah.
Before his like got ripped out of his head, which was good, little bit of foreshadowing. I was like, oh cool. It's like, all right. For later.
He just turned into a blue raspberry icy.
yes.
Yeah, so Max finds Miski, he rescues her. The Guyver is destroyed, he turns into mush, and then as they're trying to escape, they get caught by the group and they're brought back to Cronus. And this is when Miski wakes up, and boy, David Gale is so good at just being an absolute creepazoid, because he is just touching her mouth. He's like going down to like, I thought he was going to like do a fucking Reanimator and like try to whip a tit out or something. I was like, what in the fuck?
He knocked it out of the park in Reanimator. They were like, just do that again. Just fucking, people so liked bad. When you did that. Just do that.
Oh, just like God. Sits there like fools around their mouth, just stands up and unzips his pants. And
whoa!
Oh my God, what's going on here? Jesus.
It just pans for a long time. Goes, I was like, are you done yet? Because he like licks his fingers and then puts it up to her mouth. I was like, hang on. He's like, sorry.
He's like, sorry, you got some barbecue sauce. Fuck.
But then she wakes up, and I love how he's just like, oh, yeah, we're here to protect you. We'll make sure everything is okay, blah, blah, blah.
By the way, this is like his second. Did you mention this is like his second to last movie?
Really?
Yeah, before he died. He died the year it came out.
Wow. What was his last movie?
It was something called Switch, and then he was in one episode of a TV show. Okay. So apparently there's a movie that came out in 2012, which I guess is like a movie that sat on a shelf forever. So that's technically his last movie. But yeah, this is the last one that came out like in his lifetime, I guess. There we go.
He died of complications of open heart surgery in 1991. Oof. He died a little over a month before I was born.
Wow. Oof.
54.
Oh man, that's a bummer. But you know, like he went on a high note with the Guyver. You know, I mean, everyone to this day, they still talk about Fulton Ballcuff. They're like, what a great character.
That's his name. No one's gonna tell me otherwise.
He doesn't even have a name in this movie, Switch. It's just Doctor. So he's probably not in the movie that long.
It's like he shows up. He's like, hello, Doctor. And he's like, hello. And this is that's it. He's like, oh, I want to show you the growing room. And she's like, freaking out. So he brings her in there. That's where like all of the animal hybrid creatures are made. And he pretty much is like, you need to tell me how to activate the Guyver, or I'm gonna this is gonna be your new home. And she's like, I don't know how to do this.
I like in this scene, I think Matrix Reloaded ripped this off. but he was like, I'm not even joking at this point. Because he's like, all those stories you heard of werewolves and vampires, those were just zoonoids. And in Matrix Reloaded, they're like, remember there were like the ghosts and whatnot? Yep. They're like, those are like rogue programs. So like all your stories of werewolves and stuff were just rogue programs. I'm like, I'm being 100% honest. I'm like, did they rip off the Guyver? Because that's too. That is
did.
Pretty. I was joking with those other things, but this is pretty similar.
Who would have thought that they would? That so many iconic filmmakers would have looked at the Guyver and been like, oh, I'm so influenced by this right now. Inspired by what the Guyver did.
I just imagine all these influential filmmakers also in community college decided to watch the Guyver because Mark Hamill turned into an insect. And this is how it all started.
Oh my God. So yeah, he pretty much, he threatens her if she doesn't tell him how to activate the Guyver, she's going to be put into one of those tanks and live there forever. She's brought into the lab where all the magic happens, and this is where we meet Dr. East, Jeffrey Combs' character. They did this on purpose. They did it on purpose.
Yes. There's no way they didn't. If they said they didn't, they're full of shit. This is
100%. No, it had to be 100%. They're like, oh, you know, it'll be funny. It'll be a different doctor.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so good. And he worked with her father. He's also a research scientist doing research, Risky. This is what they do. Guess what? He's working with the Guyver. Oh my God. And he tells David Gale that the Guyver is alive and growing. So it's pretty much like reforming itself to the body that it was attached to.
That's real convenient.
Yeah. <ooh. laughs> And so this is pretty much where David Gale's like, well, I guess we don't need you then to tell me how to activate it. It's going to activate itself. So this is when you get the good old ball kick. Misky gets him right in the nuts, takes a Guyver, you know, and then puts it. There was like a box that when you meet Jeffrey Combs' character, he's like fighting with a creature in a box. He's like putting it in there to shut it.
Yeah.
And so she's threatening to drop it in there. And of course, because she does it, she's running. We got a Scooby-Doo moment where she's running, you know, through the lab.
There are so many Scooby-Doo moments throughout the rest of the film. Like with her and Mark and Hamill, they're doing the thing where they run into the door and run back out. I'm like, I did not expect to see that in this movie. It goes like, there'll be like an awesome fight scene. They'll be like, we got to cut back to the Scooby-Doo running scene.
Pat it out quick.
And of course, while this is all happening, all the scientists turn into different creatures. And when she threatens to throw the Guyver into this box, she actually chucks it into Jeffrey Combs' character's mouth. And he's like, it's inside, you know, he can't get it up. So freaking Lisker shoves his hand down his throat to try to get it, to the point where, no joke, he falls on the floor. And a fin shoots out of his chest, and you can hear a slight Jaws theme play as it is slicing open his stomach. And of course, the Guyver
is reanimated.
Yeah, he is. Wow.
Rebirth.
Yeah. Yeah, this is how it goes. I just love how like this all. And Jeffrey Combs, mind you, turns into a monster too. Like we need to point this out.
Yeah, he's the one who swallows the Guyver.
Yeah, but we didn't mention he was glasses. A monster at this point. Like, he's just like, everybody turns into a monster in a lab. Like, fuck it, why not?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
You got these two awkward fuckers with huge heads, like we were talking about. Dude.
Oh, God.
Keep going. Just keep going.
Tony was talking about them running back and forth. It's the one that makes the funny noises. As
the
bug
one. The insect one.
I'm assuming he's a bug, too, but he's like running back and forth, making his little cat.
Oh, like it was like voices. It looked like a little flea or something. Like it was this little hunchback thing. Like,
but then they run like back and he's and running little... back behind him.
Yeah, there's like a it's little great. Flea and then a little dinosaur guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like they try to go up the stairs and clearly it's not coded for zoonoids. So he can't get up the stairs. And like,
the other one's behind him like, duck. Get out of the way.
Look at all these zoonoid related hijinks. I bet you never thought you were going to get this in this movie. Okay.
Oh, God.
So
OSHA
would never sign off
this. So the Guyver saves Reed. Yeah, we get the Scooby-Doo moment with all the, you know, they're running around trying to avoid all these ones. Yeah. The elephant guy gets tossed into some sort of room and blows up like he's dead. We get one final sad like elephant, you know, blow.
Yes.
As he dies. I love the scene. they're fighting one of them and she picks up a microscope and she's just sitting there like waiting for the prime opportunity to hit this thing over the head. I think it was Lisker. She hits him over the head and that's when the Guyver kind of picks him up and like splits his head open, which would have been really cool if we actually saw it.
This is the flea that's attacking Mark Hamill. It's got his little like.
T-Rex right, and then he just does like the awkward like he's still, and then he slowly.
The tree falling.
This has some sound effect of tree falling over. Like, what is this show?
And she's like acting like this microscope is like so heavy. Like she's like.
It's the same one she picked up earlier and tried to hit somebody with.
I'm like, I don't think it's that heavy, but.
That's great.
Yeah, How do you know? Have you ever picked up a microscope that looked like that?
Yeah, I have. Oh, they're not that heavy.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Just feels like this is just like a high school somewhere. Like, get the shit out of the science room.
We had those same microscopes at our high school. Like, they're not that heavy.
Hooked up to your Apple IIs. Like.
So, yeah, Lisker gets his head split open. But then we get the final, probably one of the gnarliest transformations, and that is one that's been mentioned many times already in the episode.
Yeah.
That is Mark Hamill's character transforming into a giant grasshopper. And it is, oh my God, it is bad. Like, there's the point where he is on the ground, like on all fours, just shaking, convulsing. Yeah. And then, like, the things start growing out of him. And then my favorite is when the head. Yeah, the leg snaps,
yeah,
and then his head extends, painful. And his face is always on the grass, like it's just a grasshopper.
And whatever's coming out of his mouth, I was like, just spit it out, please. Dude, that bothered me so bad.
Was I the only one that watching the scene? Because he reaches down, like, oh,
his
like
leg.
His transformation's activated by getting like a Charlie horse.
Yeah,
I thought it was like this. Oh no, like your calf. But like, I also thought, I was like, maybe being in that chamber gave him like a huge Schwann sticker and like it's like draping all the way down to here.
He's like, oh God, like, I gotta lug this thing around now.
But then later on, you see the thing coming out by his leg or by his shoulder.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's his dork. Like, his head
it grew with him.
But no, like when his ankle like folds backwards.
Yeah.
That's
oh, God. Great.
That was
so good. It's my favorite effect of the movie.
I thought this was a stab at Kamen Rider.
Oh, really?
Like, because Kamen Rider is based on a grasshopper.
Yeah, it is.
And, like, I thought this was a stab at Kamen Rider. But, well, this movie also reminds me, there was an old Shin Kamen Rider called Shin Kamen Rider Prologue. It came out actually the year after this movie. And it was very similar. Like, it wasn't just like a dude in a suit. It was like hyper realistic, like bio organic, like grasshopper shit. And that's what this movie makes me think of.
Okay. So. I think it's the grasshopper reminds me of the big grasshopper alien in Arena. Did you ever see Arena?
No.
It's basically a space boxing movie. And this
is that Pan Greer in it?
No. Oh. But they have to box. This human has to box all these aliens, and one of them is a big grasshopper guy. So that's kind of what it was reminding me of.
Oh, now I just think a Hopper from A Bug's Life. Okay, yeah, no, I'm gonna check that out now. You got any?
Yeah, Arena is on Tubi, I think. Check it out; it's a fun.
Oh,
night.
There you go.
Thank you.
I'm going on a different show to talk about that at some point, so it's like fresh in my head. I'm like, wow! In the same week, I watched two movies with giant grasshopper man.
Only one of them was Mark Hamill.
Yeah, that's true.
So. Yeah, he transforms. I love how the Guyver gets down on his knees. He's like, no, Max, let me help. He's like, it's too late for me. I'm like, you've known this man for like an hour, like 2 hours. Like, you're acting like this is going to be such a huge loss for you. He's like, it's going to be okay, Max. He's rubbing his weird face. And then he dies. And then, of course, David Gale comes out and hams it up for the rest of the movie. He's literally like, well, if he stayed in the tank longer, he probably would have lived. Well, that sucks. And he's pretty much, you know, the Guyver's like, you know, I can defeat you. And he's like, no, I'm a Zoa Lord. So come and, you know, bring it. And then he like shrinks into the dark room and then comes out this giant monster, this bug monster is coming out.
I will say this is kind of a letdown. I mean, it's a cool looking dragon. It doesn't move that well. They do too many shots of the wide shot of it moving. I'm like, that's clearly on wheels.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, its legs aren't moving.
Yeah, but I'm like, the problem is just, like, seeing what the Guyver looks like, you want his final battle to be against, like, something he can have, like, a hand-to-hand combat with. Instead, it's a dragon. And it's like, what do I... Yeah, I guess I'll get close to it with my elbow. Like, it's just a real big letdown of a final fight. Like, oh, I thought he was going to do, like, ninja moves and David Gale will be the ultimate ninja bug. But it's like, nope, here's a dragon. Nope,
we're just going
to
He would
need to be, like, a humanoid creature similar to Kamen Rider. Not Kamen Rider. Yeah. The Guyver. That's what I think of. I'm sorry. Like, the Guyver. Like, that. That's so it could be, like, you know.
Yeah.
Fighting the same thing like you. Yeah, exactly. That's what it should have been. Now he's, like, elbowing dragons.
I mean, not too much of the same. You don't want to do the Venom situation.
Oh.
Where they're like, this is gray Venom. It's like, oh, okay. Make it a little different.
Hey, guys, guess what? The next one, he's going to fight red Venom. You're like,
oh, God.
Hey, that Arena movie you were talking about, is that a Kellen Lutz movie? And Samuel L. Jackson?
No, it is not that. It's Arena from 1989.
Oh, and listen, okay. If Samuel L. Jackson is in it, it doesn't get eaten by a giant grasshopper.
Oh, my God. The cover of this looks like it could have been a prequel to Super Mario Brothers.
Is there BDSM and Italians in it?
Who's in
it? You know what? There might be some Italians in it. There's an alternate cover for Arena where he's fighting like a shark with lobster hands. That thing's not in the movie. Okay. So Arena, good example, he does fight a grasshopper thing, but his final fight is against a humanoid, like, cyborg goat man that he can actually fight with. It's not against a dragon, where it's like, how do I fight that thing?
He is fighting a fucking shark on that one.
Oh, the guy who directed Arena directed Demonic Toys. And Dungeon Master.
Look at
Yeah, that thing's not in the movie. That thing is not. There are cool monsters in the movie, but they don't look like that.
That's such a disappointment. I need to see this.
I still want to see the grasshopper, though.
Yeah, just type it. It's like read a 1989 grasshopper.
I just imagine it's like Johnny Cage fighting Goro, except Goro's a grasshopper with like four boxing gloves.
It has.
So it's Machamp, right? From Pokemon.
Machamp, yes. What are you saying, Tony? I'm sorry.
No. The grasshopper in it just has like giant. I'm looking at a picture. Sorry to derail this. I just want to see what the grasshopper looks like.
Too late now. It's already gone.
I want to see what the grasshopper looks like in Guyver, and I want to compare them to see which one I like more.
I said I'm gonna put the Guyver's fist scene in. I'm gonna Photoshop it onto Arthur.
Oh yeah, when he's like making the fist, it's just Arthur. Yeah.
Okay, well, Mark Hamill's grasshopper, that's more of a body horror thing.
Yeah,
so it works there. But the 1989 grasshopper from Arena, that thing's way cooler looking.
We'll put pictures of both of them here at this point of the episode.
What about Shin Kamen Rider from Shin Kamen Rider Prologue from 1992? That's also a grasshopper, man.
I didn't see that one.
I just said you could Google the picture.
We're gonna add Shin Kamen Rider Prologue Grasshopper here too. So
1992
Prologue 1992 Grasshopper. There we go.
We're literally at the end of this movie. We're like,
this is literally just,
let's drag it out.
This is literally just Kamen Rider mixed with Cell from Dragon Ball. Like,
it's not even trying. That's 100%.
Anyway,
we're derailing. This is normal for the show.
So yeah, he fights the Zoolord. It lasts about 2 seconds because all he does is run around the room and then. Yeah.
Stab him in the eye.
The Guyver, does the eye stab. And then the creature pins him to the wall and tries to steal the pearl. But the pearl exerts so much energy that it blows him into a room and then just blows him up.
From his chest.
Yeah. Chest, dude.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, but he's grabbing the pearl, but it's causing the energy in his chest, too. Yeah.
So I gotta make my reference for Super Robot fans. Fucking Mazinger Z, his breast fires. Shoots like a ray out of his chest. That's what that shit is. It's a fucking 100%.
Yeah.
I was very disappointed in that fight. I wanted him to have to hit one eye, hit the other eye, and then hit his.
Well, he does jump on its back and like ride it for a bit.
We're talking about he's got to hit one eye to hit the other one. The glowing weak point will pop up, and you hit his scrotum.
You have to hit his weak point for massive damage.
Like God, and he just, like God also, of
War. I was just thinking, like, realistically, like this Zoalord, he's kind of limited to where he could transform.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, I'm going to kick your ass. Like, this room's too small. Can we go outside? Like,
like not damn. Really a good. Why do I got to be so big? Really helping
him out. Damn it.
So, yeah, so the Zoalord is dead. Sean comes back and he's naked. I'm like, why was he naked when he became human?
Well, no, yeah, he was reborn. Time?
Oh, that's
he was
right.
He was rebirthed.
Reanimated.
Yep.
Although this is a world where when you transform, your chains get bigger. So I don't really know what the rules are.
Speaking of a character that doesn't get murked.
Yeah. Well, I just want to state the fact that when Sean comes back, he's naked, and boy, Miski cannot stop looking down. Man, she's like,
she's well like, endowed.
All right, you can be my boyfriend.
Anytime, Miski. Hang on.
But yeah, after that they go off into the sunset, and I just love that Castle and Stryker are just around the corner, and Castle's like, I got a job for you.
He takes his cigar, and then you know what the final line is, right?
Yes.
What is it? Oh yes.
Dynamite, which I think was his catchphrase from fucking Good Times.
Yes, it was.
One thing I'm pissed about. One thing I'm super fucking mad about. I'm literally like killing myself over here thinking of it. I wanted this movie to end with them like, all right, babe, let's get out of here. And it's them riding off into the sunset on Grasshopper Mark Hamill. That's what I wanted.
I couldn't believe it ended on Dynamite. I'm like, really?
I was like,
are you serious?
Also, I didn't see those actors in the cast for the next one, so I don't know if they just dropped that cliffhanger.
I guess that job wasn't that important.
He just quit. He's like, nah.
I got a job for you. Get me a plane ticket. We're leaving. We can't beat MacGyver. Dynamite.
Oh, Dynamite. Well, that's it. That is the Guyver. Now we're going to talk about our final thoughts on the movie. So, Tony, after watching the movie, going through the plot again, what did you think of the Guyver?
I kind of loved it. The main problem with the film is that the main character isn't developed enough before he turns into the Guyver, so you don't really care about him. Like, you feel nothing when he died. And you're like, I hope like Mark Hamill puts on the suit, because I didn't really care about that guy. And the final fight, him fighting a dragon, like, the movie wasn't leading up to that. Like, no, he needs to fight like something he can actually fight. But other than that, the effects are just amazing. They clearly had a lot of fun with this movie. You got little fun nods to Reanimator in there. I'm probably gonna watch it more, to be honest. Seeing it for the first time since college, I'm like, man, I don't know why I didn't watch this more in college. It seems like it was right up my alley. And I'm excited to see the second one.
Yes.
I want to see what's up in that second one. I gotta see what happens.
All right, who wants to go next?
Okay. This is like the closest to fucking American tokusatsu, like Sentai ridiculous bullshit ever. And like, I only think I wish is there was more slice of life random shit in here. Like the Guyver doing laundry. Like, I just wanted like a scene of that in this movie that we don't get. Or, I love the special effects part of it. I thought the suits looked fucking cool. The transformations were neat. I didn't give a fuck about, like I said, the main character, who was like the most one note dude ever. Yeah. But for as far as the fights and then the villain, like I said, it should have been fucking whatever his
Lisker
name was. Lisker should have been the name.
Yeah.
Like, I was way more invested in Lisker than, you know, Dr. Dickhead there at the end. Fucking Dark Dragon dude. But anyway, it was fun. I think like going in, I didn't know what to expect, but like, I was like, all right, I kind of like this at the end, but like talking about it with you guys, I like it more, the more that I think about it. But yeah, it's fun. Like, if you are into this, like, this is the, like one of the closest to like American tokusatsu I could think of. That's not just like Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Like doing a thing, but it's fun. It's fun, dude. The effects are great. And like I said, it's kind of slapsticky, but you know, it's whatever.
you saying that you wanted to see the Guyver doing laundry, yet you say that you hate seeing people's day-to-day life in movies?
Yeah, Dan, make up your damn mind. What is your life?
It's funny. Standard. It's funny if they have like a bug suit on, though. That's funny.
Yeah. I think of the suit. There was, I don't watch a lot of Kamen Rider, but my boy does. I've mentioned it before. And there's a thing I remember watching is this dude, like, in his suit, like, powered like Kamen Rider, and he's just sitting there cleaning laundry by hand.
Yeah.
Just sitting outside, and he looks over, and there's a dish, like, a washing machine. He looks down, he looks over, and it cuts to him doing laundry in a washing machine. I was there the whole fucking time. He had no idea. But it's out in the middle of nowhere. There's just a fucking washing machine. But, like, the shit like that. Or it's a certain.
Do you want to see him shopping for groceries too?
I would love to see him shopping for groceries. Just like a list, and everybody staring at him, like what? Yeah. It's like Punch Man, like Saitama getting groceries.
It's like Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man taking an elevator and it being super awkward. Like, oh, you don't really see superheroes in normal situations like that.
Well, speaking of Spider-Man, because you remember in the original Spider-Man where Green Goblin has Peter on the roof?
Yeah.
He has him, like, stunned and he's talking to him. It's when the Green Goblin just kind of, like, nonchalantly walks up to him and can, like, slap. Woo! Hang on. Hold on. I messed up. I broke it. I broke our headphones. Anyway, going back. It's when Peter Parker like is like stunned and Green Goblin just walks up and just kind of like playfully slaps him on the back of the head and just runs up. That is the most tokusatsu thing ever. It's not like, haha, villain this, blah, blah, blah. He's just kind of like, you dumbass. Like, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, this
That's
movie,
my love.
Whenever he was in Guyver mode, it was like, this is just an action scene. They have to fight. It's like, oh, okay.
I like the awkwardness of it sometimes. Like,
yeah.
You are the Guyver. Now you have to figure out how to make your lunch for the day. Why is this guy in a 7-Eleven? What does he need?
Oh, Angela?
Anyway, that's it. There you go. Sorry.
I didn't even know this movie existed. So going into this, I knew nothing about it other than Mark Hamill was in it because you guys said it over and over. Didn't even recognize Mark Hamill, so had you guys not said anything, I wouldn't even have known
Mark
it was
Hamill
him.
With his
the mustache threw you off?
I mean, you think of him at a certain point in his life, and he looks so much older.
Yeah.
Here. So I was like, really? But yeah, the suits were awesome. The transformations I felt were very detailed. So it really got you into it. I love the jokey moments, like when Miski pulls out the line and like shocks Elephant Man in the face. She's like tapping it on the on the railing to make sure it works. Yeah. But stuff like that. Like, I want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Like, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was, I mean, I'm with you, Angela. This was, I didn't know what I was walking into other than the fact just the cover. I saw Mark Hamill. I was like, oh, sick. He's going to be like a cool Power Ranger dude fighting people. And then,
joke's on you.
And then, I said in the beginning of the episode, like, I literally had to double check to make sure the version of the movie that we were watching was the right one. I didn't want to, like, oh, no, that was the second one, guys. Damn it. Like, but no, I wouldn't, I mean, it was a lot of fun. I mean, for me, I always will talk about how much I love practical effects and Screaming Mad George and Steve Wang. They fucking killed it in this movie. The amount of effects works that are done, especially 1991, and the effects are this good and just, it's unreal. But I think my biggest gripe with it is that I wish it was a little bit more violent. I wish we got to see a lot more like blood and guts. And I understand, I guess the theatrical version is more violent, which I hope when they release the 4K version, and I get it at some point in my life, that they're going to have both versions of the movie so we can see it for it in its true form. As much as I'd be like, hey, I would love to see like them give it a reimagining, I also don't want to do that because then it'd just all be CGI. Yep. And it would just be, it would kind of defeat the purpose of it because of how special the special effects are.
Just go watch Shin Kamen Rider.
Okay.
Just go fucking watch Shin Kamen Rider, dude. Please.
I gotta check out Shin Ultraman.
It's also very good. I need to get the Raven banner. Just did a release of it. I need to go pick that up.
Sorry, were you finished, Parker?
Oh no, I had a good time. I can't wait to watch it again.
Yeah. So, I was gonna say, ahead. So I was I was looking up Zoalord earlier to get a better look at the dragon. And then I just stumbled on this. I'm going to post in the chat. I found I guess this is an international poster. And I guess in some markets, it was called Mutronics, the film. I just posted the private chat. Look at this poster. It's just the monsters posing all cool and the furry ones all sexy on the ground. It tells you nothing about the movie.
What movie are we watching?
Yeah, if you look at the private chat, it's ridiculous.
What the hell?
I saw that, and I was like, what is this?
I like how Lisker's character's just like, Like, he's like, what the fuck, dude?
This makes it think, like, these are the good guys, and the movie's about them, and they're gonna go on fun adventures. It doesn't tell you anything about the movie at all. Yeah.
Does this feel does this feel like a full moon hysteria or something? Like,
All right. Well, now that we've all shared our thoughts on the movie, we're going to go over to social media and hear what you all thought of this movie, or the people who have actually seen this movie. So we're going to start over on X/Twitter. Our first one is from We Are Authentic Podcast, who said, I watched this movie so many times as a kid and haven't thought about it in years. I didn't even know it was Mark Hamill. Well, guess what? It wasn't Mark Hamill. I mean, it was. He's in the movie, but he's not the Guyver. Sorry to say. The next one is from the Gentle Dorks podcast, who said, I love this movie. In fact, I watched it only last month because someone mentioned it as a bad movie, and I thought, I don't remember it being bad. And I was right. It was still amazingly cheesy, and that's why I loved it. And Sons and Shadows cast said, fun movie. Looking forward to hearing your takes. And then Johnny Browning chimed in and said, poster is so incorrect. You are very correct, Johnny. Very misleading. Did not like that. Now over to Instagram, where we got a couple. Our first one is from Bucket of Chum Podcast, who said, this movie kicks ass. The sequel is a cheesy good time too. Not as good, but the first one is dope. From what I've read, and I know Tony mentioned it too, a lot of people prefer the second one over the first one.
Like, that's what I'm hearing. And I think we all really enjoyed this first one. So I guess we have a lot to look forward to.
I guess we all need to watch this and get back with each other and talk about the Guyver 2 at some point. The Uncredited Extras podcast said, actually prefer the sequel, but I own both on physical media. That was Owen from that podcast. And then this was one where I wasn't sure about this reference, and he told me not to make this joke. So the Cultworthy Studios, our good friend Antonio, said, interesting, don't forget to mention the Michael Winslow meta joke at the end. Did anyone catch a Michael Winslow joke at the end?
I'm not positive of that one.
Michael Winslow is the guy from Police Academy, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I didn't notice it. So my apologies, Antonio, that I didn't get it, but maybe we can add it in at a later date. And then their last one on Instagram is from the Evil Deaths, who said, I vaguely remember this in it being wild, wacky, and inflatable.
That doesn't have flailing arms, though.
No. And we did get one over on Threads from Contrarian Prime, who says, I was a big fan of the TV spinoff, The MacGyver.
That was good. That's a good one.
Well done.
So that is it for comments on the internet. Now it is the final part of the show where our guest tells us all about what they're doing, where to find them, and all that fun stuff. So Tony, as Angela drops her mic.
That was me.
You did it.
We're a professional podcast over here, Tony, if you did not know.
Yes, we are.
Okay. Yeah,
he hit the
this
cord.
Is the quality you don't pay for.
Well, that's good. I've been making mistakes in my episodes often lately. So I'm Tony from Hack the Movies. You can check me out on Hack the Movies, where I talk about movies new and old. Sometimes we do live episodes. I think, Parker, you've dipped in a couple of those, right?
I've done in a couple of the ones that I actually can fucking show up for. Yes, I've been.
So those are fun. I also have Castzilla versus the Pod Monster, where me and Johanna, every other ish week, when we don't fuck up our schedule, we talk about Godzilla stuff. We're currently making our way through the Heisei series. which is like the 80s and to the 90s before the Millennium series. Yeah, and like we're occasionally taking breaks to talk about like newer MonsterVerse stuff, like we did like the Monarch show. We're going to be talking about Godzilla X Kong. We did Godzilla Minus One. So yeah, go back and check those out. And I'm on Cameo now. I mean, I have a Patreon, a bunch of other stuff, but I also have a Cameo. So if you want me to say stupid things, go to cameo.com/Tony Peluso and I'll say whatever you want within reason. But
I'm glad he finished then, because I would have been like,
Well, because one guy was just like, make out with Crystal. And I'm like, I think that breaks terms of service. And also, I don't want to.
So, but that's not saying anything.
I know. That was the weird part. I'm like, so yeah, that's all I got going on. And then I'm just Hack the Movies on all the socials. You'll find me.
Yep.
You can save that content for Tony fans.
Yeah, that's what you got to say in your episodes instead of saying, because you can't say it. Well, you can, but you don't say the name of the site. So you just call it Tony fans. Yeah, all the links to everything that Tony does will be down in the description or in the show notes. So make sure to check out Hack the Movies. Great show. Just great stuff Tony's doing over there. For us, you can find us on, of course, all the social medias. We're at Dissect That Film all over the place. Clearly, you know where that is since you left us all those amazing comments. We are on Patreon as well, patreon.com/dissectthatfilm. For just $1, you can get access to polls, early access to episodes, which I've actually been on top of, so people are actually getting what they're paying for. And then we have a $5 tier, which we have a exclusive show called The Monster Zone, which is hosted by Dan and Angela, where we talk about monster movies. We pretty much put a bunch of monster movies on a wheel, spin the wheel, and then we talk about whatever movie it lands on. As of this will be out in April. So when this is released, what are we talking about? I don't even think we have a movie picked out for that because we haven't even done our March one yet.
No,
so,
we haven't done the one for March.
All right. So. Well, it'll be Sky something.
Majin, that'll be
yes.
Out.
Yes. So yeah, make sure to go over to patreon.com/dissectthatfilm and pick a tier that fits you the best. And we appreciate all your support. But if you can't do that, make sure to go to any of the podcast apps and leave us a 5-star rating. Because that's cool. It's really cool to get the numbers up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all those things. And if you want to see our faces, if you want to see all of these wonderful faces, you can go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dissectthatfilm. Leave us a sub, drop a comment, hit the like button. Tell us how much you're happy that Tony's here and that we should get all the other people from Hack the Movies on the show, which is something that I need to get worked
out. Just DM them.
I will, okay? I will. Jesus.
Fucking get them off my back once in a while. Jesus Christ. I'm not enough episodes. Like, go do another podcast for a bit. God.
At least our podcast. Ours isn't the only one like that, right?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
I saw Joey C was on here.
Yes, Joey C is our unofficial holiday guy. He's been on three episodes, three episodes at all based around a holiday. So, yeah, Joey's great.
Speaking of holidays, I hope he's, I didn't listen to the episode yet, but I hope he's keeping up with his New Year's resolution to be more manly. Was he very manly in the Leprechaun 2 episode?
He was very man. I mean, just listen for the reasoning behind when he saw Leprechaun 2 and how traumatic it was for him.
It was great.
Okay?
That was the best.
We won't spoil. I mean, of course, that episode was released a long time ago based on when this will be out. But yes, listen just for the amazing story Joey brought to the table there.
And I guess one more thing about Leprechaun 2.
Yeah. yes, please.
If you listen to my Idle Hands review, we actually interviewed the director of Leprechaun 2, and I literally asked him no questions about Leprechaun 2. I just said, good job. And then I went, you had two bit parts in Carnosaur 2 and 3. Tell me all about it. Like, I was not concerned with Leprechaun 2 at all.
Tony, at that time, did you know that he was the uncle of Timothy Chalamet?
I found that out afterwards. I would have brought it up. Can you get me screenings to June 2 early?
There you go.
He's like, I haven't talked to him in 20 years. Oh, but yeah, that's about it, guys. All the links will be down in the description for all of our personal links as well. Next week, we are doing something a little different because next week is our 3-year anniversary as a podcast.
Whoa! So
I don't know what we're going to be talking about. We're we're just gonna be hanging out, having a good time, probably doing a live show. Maybe we're gonna be revisiting a movie that we reviewed in our first year of as a show, because those episodes don't get listens. Nobody listens to those episodes, so maybe we gotta redo some of them. But there's a lot of things we might be doing. So come celebrate with us as we celebrate 3 years, which is absolutely insane. So come hang out with us. And then after that, we're going to be ending our month of 1991 with the Addams Family. And we're going to be having an amazing guest for that. So stay tuned for all that fun. And before this episode gets too long, we are going to end here. So until next time, I am Brett Parker. That is Dan and Angel of DNA Gaming. And that is the famous Tony of Hack the Movies. And this has been another episode of the Dissect FM Podcast. We'll see y'all again next time. Bye-bye.
I am the Gamer!